Hello all, I'm Tamara and I'm very glad to be here. Let me tell you a little bit something about myself. I'm a graduate student at the University of Washington working at the Electrical Engineering Department, and my research involves privacy and security issues of emerging cyber physical systems, of which one is exocortex. So let me tell you something about our paper. What is an exocortex? Well, we defined an exocortex as any wearable or implanted computing machine that's being used to augment brain's biological high-level cognitive processes and to assist the user with decision-making. In this paper, we specifically focus on one existing type of exocortices, that's brain-computer interfaces, where in order to communicate with an external environment, a user uses neural signals. And in recent years, we've seen a large increase in the application space for these devices. So now we have BCIs being used to control neural prosthetics or maybe a wheelchair. We have a device that was very popular for a few years in Japan, the Neko Mimi system, the cat-like ears, where based on the observed emotion, the ears start wiggling. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we have the Mind device developed in collaboration between the Nielsen company and the NeuroFocus. And the purpose of that device was to facilitate marketing and advertisement research. So what's wrong with these devices? Well, nothing in particular. Except the way they are operating today, they can actually be used or misused, to be more precise, to mount brain spyware attacks. And brain spyware attacks, or brain spyware, are all the malicious applications aimed specifically at extracting private information about users. And when I say private information, I mean the privatest of the private, something like our prejudices, maybe our religious and political beliefs, maybe even our sexual orientation, or as has been shown in the work by Martinovic and all recently, our financial secrets, like our credit card pins, our passwords and passcodes. So what's the current state of the art? Well, currently people have recognized the problem, they're started looking at it, but at the moment there's no commercially available method that can resist these attacks. And moreover, from what we know from the neuroscientific community, if we were to try to deceive these devices or malicious attackers trying to extract information about us, that itself can be detected. Okay, are you scared yet? Well, things are not so bad, and everything is not lost, however. And the reason for that is very simple. Even though the applications are many, these devices are only starting to be deployed, and for now they're still only being used in constrained and controlled environments, such as only a few medical institutions and only a few laboratory and centers, scientific centers around the world. But if we are to learn anything from our recent past and from the situation we had with internets and maybe smartphones, social networks, then we know that the time to do something about it is now, and we ought to address these privacy and potential security threats now. And this is what we advocate in this paper. We say the development phase is so early on that we can actually include these considerations from the design phase. And we do acknowledge that this will have to be an interdisciplinary approach, which will have to involve many disciplines, neuroscientists, security experts, engineers of different sorts, as well as legal experts and ethicists. Us, being engineers, we approach the problem from an engineering perspective, and here we start following the Professor Wiener's lead. And we look at the BCI as a communication system between the brain and the external environment. Except in this communication system, instead of using our words or maybe text to communicate with the world, we use our neural signals. So if we look at these devices in such a way, then we can see they consist of several components. So typically you have a user using is wearing an EEG cap or something else on their head, and the signals are being recorded and collected in the signal acquisition component. That signal is then typically being digitized and is being processed. When it comes to signal processing, we typically have two components, feature extraction and classification. And once we've deduced what user intention was, we can provide that information to the application, being that a neuroprosthetic control or a game or whatever it may be. Okay, so if we look at the system in terms of a block diagram, what are potential privacy threats and why do they occur? Well, it's sort of simple why do they occur. As with the current state of things, in the recent years, several manufacturers of these devices, in order to facilitate further research and deployment, have offered consumer-grade devices, and not only them, but they've also opened up the whole application development space to everyone. So now you have a case where not only that you have access to a person's signals if a person is using device, but you can also develop an application. And this is where the threat, this is where the things kind of get scary. Because you can imagine someone malicious doing several things. You can hijack the signal processing component and do malicious things with it to try to extract information. Or if you are a more resourceful attacker, you can actually add your own signal processing component and run things in parallel. Or the scariest thing, you can develop your own malicious application where a person may be doing something completely benign and yet you may be extracting private information. Okay, so that's all very abstract. But how do we go and how do we begin extracting that private information and why does it work? As it turns out, the EEG signal, that noise looking like signal, is extremely information rich and it consists of many components. And it turns out that one component in particular is very useful for these types of attacks. That component is known as event-related potential. What that event-related potential actually is the following. It's a response associated with a specific sensory, cognitive, or motor control event. And it can be observed as either a positive or a negative voltage peak. And it's typically time-locked to a stimulus, which means it has a very high temporal resolution. These ERPs are elicited by familiar stimuli or unexpected events. So now, if you think about it a little bit further, you kind of start seeing that you can go after a private information in a 20 questions paradigm, in that sort of a setup, where you have one main question that you want to get answered to, and you have a set of possible answers. And now, in order to come to the correct one, you start asking questions so that you start narrowing down your set of possible answers until you reach the solution. What's even more interesting about these ERPs is that you can go after this private data in both conscious way, in other words, so that the person is aware of the stimuli you're presenting, but also in a subliminal way, so that the stimuli are presented below a person's conscious level of observing things. Okay, so what do we do when we want to go after a private information? We place an EEG cap on your head, we place the electrodes on the right locations, and then we provide a stimuli, which can, as I said, be either conscious or subconscious. And we record the exact moment in time when we provided a stimuli, and we record the whole EEG signal. After that, we let the user go, and then we start processing the signal. First of all, we need to get rid of noise. Then we need to get rid of the mean of the signal. We need to do a little bit of averaging. But as an end result, we have something like this. Okay, now I know I need to turn it on. Oh, it's working. Okay, I can see it. Anyways, I can do it without. So if we have a stimulus occurring at time zero, then if you're looking after looking at the P300 component, that component will typically be observed as a positive peak 300 milliseconds after the stimulus. And that tells us something, the amplitude of that component will tell us a lot. If you're reacting to something, the amplitude will be higher than if something doesn't have meaning to us. All right, so that's nice, but very theoretical. Let me show you a real example of a threat of this sort that we've developed, but not to try to go after your privatest of the private information. We developed it to facilitate our research to understand what's going on and how do we prevent it. So the thread that we've developed is a game called Flappy Whale, and it's a game where looking something like this shown below, where a user sits in front of the screen, and the point of the game is to control the position of the whale so that the whale goes through the tubes. You don't want to hit the tubes. And as you become more proficient in the game, we make the tubes narrower, and it becomes kind of harder to push the whale through the tubes. So it sounds like a simple game. With a twist, you're controlling the game with your neural signals, either with or your muscle signals, either EMG or EEG signals. While you're playing this game, we ask you something as simple as, we never go after your private information, we only ask some simple questions such as, what's your favorite coffee shop? And while you're playing the game, we flash you with the logos of coffee shops, and we're recording your EEG signal. The hypothesis being that when you recognize your favorite coffee shop, your ERP component that we're looking at will be higher than for all the other logos. So that's how we go about it. And again, we're never trying to extract anything that might be scary or might be privacy affecting. All right. So now I kind of need to switch gears a little bit. After you've seen the game and after we explored it, we kind of want to know what's the actual risk. We can talk, oh, risk is this and that, we're extracting information, we can, but unless we can actually objectively quantify it, it stays in the realm of guessing. So in order to know what's actually going on, we again resorted to Wiener's solution, and we're trying to cast this problem into a known and very well explored models from game theory. So we're modeling this attack as a multiple access channel with generalized feedback. It's mouthful, I know, but it's not that complicated. So here's what's going on. We say your intent to move the whale up or down can be considered as one source and one message. For example, source one with message X1. And your private information about the fact that Starbucks is, for example, your favorite coffee shop can be considered another source of information with a message X2. Now, these two messages get combined into a recorded EEG signal, and that's the signal that we observe from the outside. And that's the signal that a malicious person would be able to observe as well. So now, if a malicious person is able to provide feedback about the game, then what we will observe as a feedback Z1 is going to be the position of the whale on the screen. But there may also be another source of feedback, and that source of feedback may come from the attacker's ability to extract our private information. For example, if an attacker can with certainty deduce what's her favorite coffee shop, they may stop flashing those stimuli. If not, they may continue doing that. So that's the other source of feedback. Why do we need this? Well, this helps us provide a validated and very well-researched mathematical framework to now define what a successful attack is. Intuitively, it's very simple. An attack is successful if an attacker can actually decode our private information. But that itself may not be enough. We may need a little bit more. And that little bit more is known to everyone doing something with security. We actually want that attack to remain hidden. So, because if you think about it in terms of a flappy whale game, if the whale stops moving on the screen, even though you're moving, for example, your hand, then the game isn't really interesting and nothing's happening. And after a few seconds, you'll say, oh, this is not working, and you'll leave. And the attacker may have not gained enough information. But as long as the game's progressing and everything's fine, you'll keep on playing and the attack is successful eventually. So this is a successful attack. With an information theoretic framework, we can define the probability of that successful attack happening. And then we can extend it further. We can also define the goal of a user. And I'll talk a little bit more about it in a second. But once we know the goals of both of them, once we know the needed resources, we can move a little bit further and explore this in the game theoretic framework. And now we can see what the attacker needs to do to make to optimize the attack, to use his resources in the best way, and what the user needs to do to prevent these attacks. And that's the aspect that interests us the most, because we really want to prevent these attacks from happening. So we now focus on the user. And again, user's goal is very intuitive. user wants to prevent all unauthorized parties from ever accessing and decoding our private data. And here comes our main contribution, at least the way I see it. We do have an approach to it, and what we propose is, let's take that information-rich EGS signal, and let's acknowledge that there are many components in it, but that our legitimate BCI application only needs a little piece of it, one or a few components. So let's use those needed components and let's provide them to the application, but let's never store or transmit the whole neural signal, as it may provide information we are not willing to give. Okay, that may or may not make sense. But if hopefully it does, but how do we implement it and how do we go about it if that's the approach we want to follow? And here we resort to existing technologies. And we look back at the, for example, smartphone industry. In a smartphone industry, as many of you know, and many of you probably much better than I do, there's something called private and identifying information. An example of that would be your phone book entries, your current location, the photos and the videos that you have. And as you all know, we don't want to give that access to that private identifying data to all of the applications and to the whole world. So what typically happens when you download the application is granted certain rights. It can access some data and some of the PIIs, but not all of them. And that's the approach we're proposing here. We're saying neural signals should be treated as a PII, and only certain component applications should have an access only to the certain components. So how do we go about it? Well, in a simple way, we propose adding a new component to our big block diagram, and that new component is called BCI anonymizer. It sits between the signal acquisition and the signal processing part of the BCI. And the main purpose of that is to protect our data. And how does it go about it? Well, it's a secure and trusted subsystem that takes the raw neural signal and decomposes it into specific components. And then, if you have an application installed and that application has been given certain rights, then once the application requests access to certain components of our signal, our BCI anonymizer provides only those components, never the whole signal. Of course, because of this architecture and because of the way we're thinking about it, there are two challenging parts. First, our BCI anonymizer has to be realized as a part of a user system. It cannot be realized as a part of any external network or in the cloud. Because if it is, then we have a hard time making sure it's secure and trusted. But there are known and probably secure solutions to make it, to organize it in the proposed way, to make it a part of a user system. Second challenging part is making it, being able to decompose that information-rich signal in real time. Again, there are solutions to that problem, and we're currently working on it and exploring which solution will work for our application. Okay, so that seems reasonable and it could work. But as many of you probably know, smartphone security is not perfect. If anything, people have identified several problems, and I do want to acknowledge those. So first of all, it might be the case that the operating system does not have sufficient control to control all the communication channels in order to prevent information leakage. In addition, some implementations may not give us as users enough ability to give or not give rights to certain aspects of our private data. And finally, and that's something that I personally find the most challenging, it often requires that we understand which private data we're giving and what can happen with that data. And things become even more challenging with neural signals. Okay, but the nice thing about our approach is that by implementing it, we actually avoid and solve all of these problems. And we talk more about it in the paper, but inherently, because of the way system is organized and because of the way we're working, we're going about it, you don't have any of these three issues, which is nice. And sort of helps with quite a few problems. Even though it does, however, we do acknowledge that it only addresses this one specific privacy threat. And it's going to be hopefully a good solution to that privacy threat. But other privacy threats may be identified. Maybe some security threats can be identified. What we're saying is this solution will work for one problem. We still need an interdisciplinary approach where we will go about developing technical solutions for real life problems. And then on top of that, we will develop industry standards to prevent certain attacks from ever being mounted. And we do believe those industry standards will have to be voluntary. And on top of that, we will need regulatory rules and government impact on it. With this, I would like to conclude my talk, and I would like to remind us all, in the spirit of this conference, that it's been almost 70 years since Professor Wiener described the brain as an information processing system, and since he warned about possible problems with the melding of the human brain and computational machines. The first attacks on non-invasive brain-computer interfaces have happened. They're there, so we need to acknowledge that may be happening. But the things are not, we're not doomed. Things can be done to prevent these issues, and we should act now. We should include privacy, security, usability, and safety consideration into the design of these emerging technologies now, from start. And you know, with this technology, we're lucky, because we're early enough in the design and development phase so that we can actually include all of these considerations into the system design from start. And that's important and will make a huge difference. With that, I'll finish. I would just like to acknowledge my co-authors and our good collaborators from another department, as well as our source of funding. Thank you for your attention.